Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but
currently,
I'm a fiddle player too."
The tree trust fund is being used to plant trees in socially vulnerable areas of the city where we don't get the high residential buy-in. Because when I put trees in the ground, I have to look to make sure that they're irrigated and established for anywhere from 12 to 24 months, which is a considerable cost on top of the tree itself and the planting of, you know, the installation of the tree. Whereas with this citizen group, they can do it for about an 80 to 85% savings on what I have to cost me to put trees in the ground for the city.
This is really interesting, okay? This is Chris Stoltz. He's the arborist for the city of Pensacola. And the conversation they were having at the Pensacola Agenda Review Session on Monday for the meeting tomorrow night was over some stuff related to tree fund and planting trees. And you basically remember you have this $1 million grant that's come into the city, and then you've got a bunch of money in the tree planting trust fund. And what they're trying to figure out is, where do we plant these trees? We've done this canopy study, right, to figure out, where are we missing trees? Where are the heat islands, because there are not enough trees that are absorbing the sunlight and also shading the ground and all that? And what it turns out, no big surprise, something I actually mentioned to you maybe last week or the week before, is that generally across America, you have this growing kind of idea of tree equity. You know, the idea that the wealthier, nicer areas have lots of trees and shade, and you know, it's beautiful and it's wonderful. And then places that are not so nice don't have as many trees, not so much shade, and it's not as nice and wonderful. And so, and I'm not saying that D.C. Reeves or Chris Stoltz are advocating tree equity, but there's this recognition that, you know, nicer areas have and less nicer areas don't have. And so they're talking about planting trees in the areas that need it, in the less nice areas. And the reason is because those folks aren't as prone to maintain and help and do the kind of community work that other areas are able to do. And so the city has to step in and kind of help them have the trees, if that makes sense. And this is a really important conversation about not just social equity or who gets the trees, but kind of where do you invest your resources?
The process would be to keep having residential community organizations put in trees in areas where people are going to take care of the trees and to take ownership and have buy-in. Whereas the city will try to target its money and its trees for the areas where we're not going to get a whole lot of buy-in, that still need the overhead canopy cover.
Because you have community organizations like the neighborhood associations, and these are in places where people are very passionate about their neighborhoods, want to take care of things, and are willing to, for example, plant and maintain trees, and therefore it's a much lower cost to the city if they want to reimburse that activity versus the city having to pay employees to go plant and maintain and water these trees. And so it's a question of where do you get the best result for the limited money that you have. And this is the challenge with the heat islands, poorer parts of town. It's going to cost more to put trees in there because you don't have the community willing to do or defray so much of the work through volunteerism.
Currently, the places where I'm trying to put trees have been targeted in the tree canopy study as areas that are located within high heat islands, areas that obviously lack tree cover currently, that are both economically and socially vulnerable, lower income places where it's not the higher end parts of town.
Exactly. And so this is really common sense. It is, you look at the nice part of town, you know, I mean, take your East Hill or whatever, and you say, you know, trees, right? And you look at other parts of town, you're like, not trees. And what you want to say, if you're sort of a social critic, is you want to say, it's just another example of the rich people getting and the poor people not getting. Well, maybe, but also maybe it's because in the nicer areas you have more people, whether it's because they have leisure time or because they're interested or because they have money for themselves, they can spend it, but they maintain stuff better. And in the other parts of town, they don't. And so trees either get neglected or they die or they don't get planted in the first place for a variety of reasons. And it might just be because the citizens there are not involved in the same way that the nicer area folks are. And so they've talked about the cost of these trees. And you know, when they first came on, they're trying to figure out how much it would actually cost to plant and maintain a tree. I love that DC is always looking at the maintain cost, because the cost of the tree is not just the cost to put it in the ground. They thought it was $500. They think it's more like $1,600 to $1,800, $1,800 now is kind of the idea. Well, if you're spending $75,000 and it's almost $2,000 a tree, you know, you get 40 trees-ish, right? But the difference is, if you fund trees through the neighborhood associations and have them do it with their resources and their people, all of a sudden, you know, you can get maybe 7 or 8 or 10 trees for the price of one in the bad areas, so to speak.
What I envision over the long term is we get the volunteer groups going, whereas I can put in 5 trees for what Kelly's group can put in 54. So to encourage this behavior, to encourage these groups, so that we can use them in the long run to put greater numbers of trees in more areas of the city. But you have to let people start where they're comfortable first. And that's, if that means their front yard, great. Let's get them to put trees in their front yard to begin with. But as we expand this, I really believe that we could get a movement going here where people in the city are going to be bought into to putting trees in the ground, and we'll be much more efficient.
So if you can create a kind of army of arborists, you know, who start off by taking the, for the city, much cheaper alternative of having them plant trees in their own yards, okay, then they get in the habit of planting trees, and maybe you can kind of co-opt them into planting in other areas, or at least, you know, more common areas, and then you can have more trees overall. And so long term, you get far greater number of trees, even if you don't get them maybe in certain parts of town that are, you know, identified as more in need of it, specifically because those people don't live there. So we'll come back to this. I just thought this was a really fast, you know, everybody's kind of very carefully talking around this rich poor conversation and how it impacts on where we plant trees. But I personally found it very refreshing that Chris Stultz was so honest about this. And I thought it was worth sharing with you before we talk to the mayor in 20 minutes. Candy has traffic on the 5s.
It looks like everything is running smoothly, not showing any problems on Avalon. It's clear through Garson Point Bridge, and traffic on I-10 east and west now traveling at posted speeds. No slowdowns reported on 98. If you see an accident or slow down, 437-1620 for your traffic tips. You can text him in. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. Back to Chris Stultz, the city arborist in Pensacola, talking about the funding for his own job, basically.
Now, moving forward, let's say once all this grant money is gone and all the tree trust fund money has been brought down, moving forward, my position's not going anywhere. I'm already weekly and monthly producing revenue just by enforcing the ordinance as written, which hadn't been enforced as written prior to me getting here. So there's always going to be some sort of income coming in from tree heritage, tree permitting, from unfortunately fines, you know, and of course for mitigation to remove older trees or trees that are a nuisance. So I think moving forward, that will be our annual budget.
So we had a way to, you know, collect the revenue, but it wasn't really being enforced, from mitigation, from penalties, from heritage trees, all that. And he says, you know, hey, we're flush with cash because we're not actually enforcing the ordinance. It'll pay for my job. And also more than that, we can actually get the money going into the tree planting trust fund and get these trees being planted. Allison Patton is asking the question, well, okay, but it sounds like what you're saying is we're going to neglect the ideal but bad areas in order to plant more trees in the kind of the nicer areas. I'm not sure about that.
I mean, these will be planted in yards of people or right-of-ways of people who want them. It may or may not have been where the tree canopy study said we needed trees. I guess what I'm hearing is there's still an incredible benefit because we're getting a lot of trees than we would be able to plant with the money we have if we were to put them in those locations where the tree canopy study said that we should put them.
And he says that's not quite true.
It's not that the tree canopy study doesn't show that where Kelly and her group wants to put the trees, we don't need them. It's just as a priority, we're going to put trees in more socially vulnerable areas than in more higher end areas, regardless if both areas need it the same. The reason being is we're going to get more buy-in with people putting trees in themselves and taking ownership, as opposed to other areas of town where we have to do it, because no one's going to spend the time to care for that tree for its first year, year and a half.
And this is, so why don't you get better social change? Why don't you get, for example, you know, more foliage in the poorer parts of town? because you don't get the buy-in there because, you know, you're forcing the boulder uphill, so to speak. It's not that it's not worth doing, that it can't succeed ever, but it is going to cost you more and it is going to be harder to accomplish. And by the way, when you let people kind of put them in themselves that want to put them in the sort of nicer neighborhoods and whatnot, those trees survive.
If you would please, because I know you gave this number to me, so I want you to say it again. What's the success rate in East Pensacola Heights on their buy-in? How many trees survived?
96% survival rate on the trees that purchased with city funds.
That's higher than anything we've done.
Yeah, and that's Jen Brayer, by the way, asking the question. So it can seem frustrating if you look at this situation and say, well, wouldn't it be great if we could have sort of the tree equity concept, right? You know, wouldn't it be great if we could have clean streets in the poor neighborhoods? Wouldn't it be great if, and you go across your list of items that you might say are the kind of the checklist distinctives between nicer neighborhoods and poorer hoods, and what you find sometimes is that it's not just that there's less end result quality in the poorer neighborhoods, but there are really reasons why. And the reason is externally and through some racist, classist system that penalizes poor people. Just the reality is that, for example, there's more litter over here. Maybe it's because poor people litter more and don't clean up their neighborhood because they don't take ownership of their neighborhood the same way that wealthy people do or can pay somebody to do it. Same thing with the trees. It's just, that's how I read this. That was my takeaway from this. It's not just the conversation about where's the best plant trees and where can we make the most impact and get the best bang for the buck, but really, you know, why do some of these situations exist? Well, it can also be a byproduct of the people and their interests and their time and their willingness to do these things in various neighborhoods. So this was there, but like I said, I personally found it a very refreshing conversation. Chris Stoltz is probably going to get in trouble for being so honest, you know, but I praise people who are willing to tell the truth about this stuff and be fun. 722 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are in need of doing any kind of a home improvement project, you got a repair, you're doing an add-on, you're doing it yourself, or maybe you're a construction worker on the scale. I'm always at the low end. Like on the 1 to 10, I'm the -3. You know, but still, I still need advice. I still need supplies. So Pensacola Hardware has to get all of that. And when you go there, it's not just that they have it, okay? I mean, that's true. They will have it on hand. If they don't have it, you don't need it. They've been doing this so long that if you're like, anything, and they're like, we don't carry it, and they'll be like, and here's why we don't. Because here's the thing you actually need that's better for what you're trying to do. But you can also ask them for advice, and they'll tell you how to install it, what the code is, if that's relevant to what, even inspectors, if you're a professional builder. And they'll be like, okay, that's Jim. And here's what Jim is going to be doing. Do it this way, because you'll do it right. They've been around since 1851, the state of Florida, right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street, Pensacola Hardware.
Here's today's Strength for Life.
Winning at life is a scriptural concept. Run that you may obtain speaks of winning. Run in such a way that you avoid being a castaway. We should run like Paul, not Demas. Paul fought a good fight, finished his course, and kept the faith, and henceforth there's laid up for him a crown of righteousness. However, Demas forsook his friend and his faith, having loved his present world. Paul was a winner, but Demas was a castaway. So what's the key to winning at life? The Bible says it's temperance, self-control. It's not asceticism, religious self-effort, but it is spiritual self-control. Control. Temperance is a fruit of the Spirit. It's allowing your position in Christ to determine your pursuits. So avoid being a castaway by biblically regulating each area of your life, spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, verbally. Control yourself for God's glory. Spirit-filled self-control is the key to winning at life.
For more Strength for Life, check out our website at strengthforlife.church.
The I-10 Wired Summit returns October 18th to Pensacola Beach. Sponsored in part by Data Revolution, the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference is your opportunity to get connected on the Gulf Coast. This year includes the AFSIA TechNet CyberCoast track, a $100,000 prize competition, and a concert by the Molly Ringwalds at Casino Beach Bar. Special pricing is available for college students and government employees. Go to i10wired.com for information.
This message is sponsored by the Florida A&M University Medical Marijuana Education and Research Initiative, the Florida broadcasters, and this radio station.
Mary on Demand is live. Start your marijuana education journey today. Learn at your own pace and check out the Medical Marijuana Education Series. You decide what you like to learn and when with Mary on Demand. Visit mary.famu.edu. That's mmeri.famu.edu. And remember, recreational marijuana is still illegal in Florida. Mary, educate, learn, talk.
Fox News' Guy Benson gives you the news and brings you the newsmakers every day at 2 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Victory is mine!
Good morning, 726 on News Radio 92.3. The Black Knight was experiencing a house of pain for sure. Kenny's got traffic on the fives.
As we take a look around, good news is we're not showing those accidents now. It looks like everything is running smoothly. Avalon, Garcon Point Road, not showing any issues there. 90 from Milton into Pace into Pensacola, also clear. Traffic moving smoothly in both directions. Traffic tips, text them in 437-1620. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Former President Donald Trump will be in Michigan tonight to speak with striking UAW auto workers. Of course, a lot of those workers will probably be glad to see the former president there. Union leadership has not been so welcoming.
Mr. Trump's visit blasted by UAW leadership, who say they're fighting an economy that enriches people like Donald Trump at the expense of workers.
And that is NBC News Maggie Vespa. UAW President Sean Fain had a lot of not so nice words about former President Trump, who is skipping the Republican presidential debate tonight to attempt to build up some support with the workers there. Baltimore police searching for a suspect in the killing of a young tech entrepreneur, 32-year-old Jason Billingsley, wanted for first-degree murder in connection with the death of Pava LaPere. The 26-year-old woman's body was found Monday. And New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez will be arraigned in Manhattan today on federal bribery and corruption charges. Menendez, his wife, and three co-defendants were indicted last week.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 437-1620. In just a couple minutes, I'll talk with the mayor about this. We've been talking about it extensively, but, you know, Bay Bluffs Park is closed. Like, there's a big old barricade up over the entrance and you can't go there. In fact, they're closing down the parking lot too, because, you know, if you can't park there, it's harder to get there. It's harder, harder to get, you know, but people are still going in because people love that park and they love that boardwalk and they love getting down to the beach. And that's really the only place where you can do it down in that vicinity. But apparently there was some people who misunderstood the terminology that the mayor had been using about this closure.
Bay Bluffs Park, I'm going to give this another attempt. There's a little confusion, I think, reported out there between the difference between permanent and indefinite. And I'll, what we're saying is we have never said that we would demolish Bay Bluffs Park and not replace it permanently. That has never been said. And obviously with some emails I'm getting, I think there's been a miscommunication as far as that.
Yeah, sometimes you use the right word that people hear the wrong way, because indefinite does sound like forever. Indefinite just means they don't have funding or a date, you know? So he's not giving up on trying to do it. Why do they need to, and I hate to say this if this is the first time you're hearing this, but the plan is to demolish the structure. The plan is to get rid of it all. You know why? Because?
The reason we need to demo it is because of how it's going to be used and, frankly, how it has been used since March, which is that the park has been closed. And, of course, we have people jumping over the signs and using it anyway, which has the same risk that of someone getting hurt as if as if we had it open.
So a super popular thing that nobody really believes is decrepit and dangerous, as the city is telling them, you put up a sign and a barricade, and what do? Well, they go use it anyway.
Right.
Because, I mean, I'll just tell you, honestly, what I was thinking is, man, I gotta go hop the barricade before it's not there anymore. You know, I'm like, I want to go, because it's a great amenity. It really is. And, you know, how dangerous, none of us believe that it's dangerous. Even though the experts are saying that, you know, it's falling apart. And you're like, it doesn't feel wiggly to me. I've been on rickety structures before. This doesn't feel that way. So, you know, they've looked for ways to patch it and to just put a few boards up here and there and to fix it. He said it doesn't work. There's no way to do this. And we can't secure it, so we're on the liability hook. It's not like a building you can just lock up. So it's gonna have to go away, and we'll find funding and we'll make it happen. And I care about it too, he says. And it just won't come back in its current form, most likely. So we'll talk about that with the mayor when we come back here in just a few minutes. David, what do you have coming up, sir?
Two people charged after a hotel break-in. After Fox.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. It's announced that an American soldier who fled to North Korea in July, Travis King, is being deported.
Pyongyang's announced the U.S. Army private is to be expelled. The soldier ran across the border from South Korea to the north after going on a civilian tour of the demilitarized zone. He'd been facing a dishonorable discharge from the U.S. Army.
Fox's Jonathan Savage, no word yet when King might be released or where he'll be sent. The Senate advances a short-term bill to avoid a government shutdown Sunday.
House Republican Texas Congressman Chip Roy already pouncing on the deal over its spending levels.
And nothing to deal with the border.
Speaker McCarthy says he will likely bring his own spending bill to the House floor Friday that will, quote, secure the border. It's unclear if he has the votes to pass it, but the House is moving on individual spending bills this week.
Fox Ryan Schmelz, the Senate bill would keep the government funded until November 17th. Let me make a please.
Good morning, third one at News Radio 92.3. It's mostly cloudy, 73 this morning in Pensacola. And some residents in Santa Rosa County are speaking up about impact fees. They say they should be collected to help offset the costs of infrastructure needs as more homes continue to be built there. During this week's committee meeting, Commissioner Kerry Smith had an issue with a vote last week's budget workshop to table the discussion until late next year.
We basically directed staff to just drop working on impact fees until October of next year. That's what my understanding is. And that's something that it just does not bode well with me to go all the way to October of 2024 to see where we're at.
And Smith, along with several residents, said that new construction impact fees are needed to help offset infrastructure costs. Back in the summer, Duncan Associates completed an updated study recommending that fees range from anywhere from $1,911 to $2,254 for a single-family home. Well, there's been a lot of infighting among city leaders in Milton. The contract, though, is now in place for Scott Collins to take the job as city manager.
Our city attorney knows that. He knew it from the beginning that it was a disturbing process the way it happened. I made that very clear. And may the record reflect that the attorney is frowning at me.
That from City Councilwoman Marilyn Farrow during a meeting last week. Of course, Collins did agree and sign a 21-month contract. He'll officially start on the job as Milton City Manager on October 2nd. At least one Escambia County School Board member thinks that one portion of the OLF 8 property would be a great location to build a new high school. During a school board workshop this week, District 1 School Board member Kevin Adams pointed to some data showing just how much growth they've had in Beulah the last few years.
But right now, there's approximately 121 total residential developments either in discussion or in the pipeline. For multifamily, approximately 1,674, that'd be your apartment duplexes. Your single family, 5,228.
And Adams also says that prior superintendents Malcolm Thomas and Tim Smith had both sent letters to the county board requesting that some space be allocated for a school there. Currently, Escambia County leaders are reserving the space for job creation. It appears right now there's no serious purchase offers on the table for the OLF 8 property. Fortune magazine naming HCA Florida West as a top hospital in the nation. It is the fifth time they've earned that recognition. That program started in the early 90s. It became IBM Watson. Fortune magazine acquired it in early February, and HCA Florida West has been recognized again five times, 2012, 2015, 2016, 2017, and now 2023. And it is 7:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with Candy.
And not showing any slowdowns or delays. It looks like everything is running accident-free. I-10, I-110 reporting as clear. Not showing any problems on 87 or Avalon, or 98 for that matter. If you see an accident or a slowdown, text in your traffic tips 437-1620, News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
It's going to be a mostly cloudy day with a 50% chance for rain. High temps will be mainly in the middle 80s. If we end up with a good bit of sunshine, of course, it'll be a little hotter out there. So on the humid side as well, rain chance again, about 50% on Thursday, but a jump ahead to the weekend shows most likely the weather will be dry with lots of sunshine. I'm Chief Meteorologist Alan Strom with your WEAR News weather forecast.
Right now, 73 in Pensacola, 76 in Gulf Breeze, 73 in Milton, and mostly cloudy skies across the area. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Jennifer Kishenko with Your Money Now. TikTok has spent the past 3 years trying to convince U.S. lawmakers it can operate independently in this country from its Chinese-based parent company, ByteDance. After some recent personnel moves, some employees aren't so sure. Since the start of the year, the Wall Street Journal says a string of high-level executives have transferred from ByteDance to TikTok, taking on some of the top jobs in advertising, HR, monetization, and business marketing. Japanese carmaker Nissan says all new models it launches in Europe will be fully electric, as it reaffirmed its aim for solely electric vehicle sales on the continent by 2030. It says it was pressing ahead with the existing target just a week after the UK pushed back a ban on the sale of new gasoline and diesel car sales from 2030 to 2035. Nissan says one-third of the more than 1 million EVs it has sold worldwide have been in Europe. Globally, Nissan plans to launch 27 electric and hybrid vehicles by 2030. Your money now.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, Pensacola Bay Oysters, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
News Radio Pensacola is your trusted source for hurricane coverage. If a hurricane approaches, News Radio Pensacola will provide you with the latest forecasts and warnings from the National Hurricane Center. If a hurricane approaches, News Radio Pensacola will help you find resources for disaster relief. If a hurricane approaches, News Radio Pensacola will interview experts on hurricane preparedness and safety.
No one covers the storms like News Radio 92.3.
As you'll notice, if you wake up in the morning and your recycling can has disappeared, that is intentional. This is the week we are picking up those recycling cans, so you don't have to worry. We won't come looking for it or put anything on your bill. But of course, starting next week is when you'll start to have the twice a week garbage pickup.
That's Mayor D.C. Reeves yesterday during his press conference talking about the recycling cans. He joins us now by phone. Mayor Reeves, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Why are you stealing people's recycling cans?
Yeah, I realized during a town hall last night, which was great. We had a great turnout debut for Casey Jones' town hall. And there's this very interesting parallel with two things that we're going to talk about, recycling and Babe Love, said, as I told the folks in there. You know, maybe you don't like these ideas or maybe you have anxiety about those. I understand that. But the easiest thing for the mayor to do in both of these cases is nothing. That's the easy thing to do on both of these fronts. So, you know, maybe you agree, maybe you don't agree, but I'm doing these things because I believe that they're the best decisions for the city, even when they're hard, and they're certainly hard politically. So from a political standpoint, if you think I'm only going to do the thing that's the most positive politically, this should be case in point proof that I'm willing to take on things that aren't very popular only because I think it's the right thing for the city.
I appreciate that. I actually had somebody text me and say, well, how do you know that the Bay Bluffs park structure isn't being demolished for political reasons? And was it an outside agency that did this structural survey? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that based on the political heat DC's getting over this, that he's not doing it for anything other than the stated reasons, and he wishes he didn't have to. So, yeah. But, yeah, you're picking up, going to, no recycling for a little while. But you guys say that in 30 days you're going to try to set up a drop zone, basically, where you can bring it once a week or something. We're going to staff it so people can bring in just bare-bones recyclables, right? Steel and aluminum cans, high-density plastic, and 2 liters, basically, right?
Exactly. And because we want to set the tone that of whatever, even though this is going to be just a very short-term approach, we may keep it long-term, but this is not the be-all, end-all of our alternate to recycling. But what we want to do is let's start getting in the habits that and break away from the habits that got us here. And what I mean is, as I explained in the press conference, there's a big, big difference between recyclable, meaning it can literally, by definition, be recycled, and folks that are items that actually have a market, they are purchased and not put in a landfill. And so I think we need to start now in delineating what those are. And you mentioned of aluminum and steel cans, like canned goods, plastic bottles. It could be 20-ounce, 2-liter kind of, you know, Coke bottles when you think about that. And then, of course, the heavier plastic, like the detergents, the milk jugs, the things like that. So we didn't even want to open the one day a week without having clear definition about what the kind of the overall future of what we take is, regardless of where we go from here. And because I don't want to yet again have mixed messages about, you know, what we're going to do. So but that's our hope by November 1st. We were working through that yesterday, that you'll be able to go to Leonard Street there where our transfer station behind Pensacola High School. And every Wednesday, you'll be able to drop off those items. And, of course, we'll be advertising it
more. Yeah, absolutely. Very good. Let's talk about that other one, the Bay Bluffs Park. You know, you and I have talked about this quite a bit last week as well. But, look, you're talking about demolition. Do you have a time frame in mind for the removal of the structure?
No. And actually, I was talking with some folks after the town hall and said the same thing. I mean, it's going to take a little bit, like any procedure like this at the city government level. That it's going to have to be RFP'd. It's going to have to be, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time. Hence the reason we're philosophically moving on it now, because that's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to get done. And it's frankly where we're exposed is, I know you mentioned, believe it or not, one little metal gate that says park closed is working. I know that's hard to believe,
right.
But, you know, it's just not working. People are jumping over it now, even less, you know, cops not going to walk down there because it's closed. You know, I mean, it exposes us so much more. And again, when I am told by not just an independent engineer, but our own engineer, our public works leader, Amy Tootle, is also an engineer. When we have two opinions that say it's unsafe, what other option do I have? I mean, if this is your child or your brother or your sister that goes down here, and I've been told by engineers that it's unsafe for people to go on, how can I live with myself and say, yeah, don't worry about it. You know what? Let's just keep it open because politically it's easier to do.
Let me play the sort of citizen advocate on this one more time.
Sure.
Okay. So we have a Gulf of Mexico, which has dangerous beasties. And people drown in the Gulf of Mexico all the time. We don't close the Gulf because it's dangerous. We just tell people, be careful. And we do postcards, you know, to try to keep people safe as much as possible. But we know we can't guard everybody, and there's going to be problems that are going to happen. People clearly want to use this thing despite your best warnings from the engineers that it's not safe for them. My own reaction when I heard there was a gate up was, I kind of want to go down and walk it one last time before it's gone. You know, that's my – and I'm like, I'll take my kids because fine. Why can't you just say, the structure's not sound, it's not safe, proceed at your own risk until we demolish it or until whatever? Why can't we take that approach as a city?
All right, well, two things. One, the Gulf of Mexico analogy would be the equivalent of the bus itself just along Scenic Highway, you going down there. You know, we don't mandate what you can and can't do going down some either private property or whatever that's not. We are inviting, when there's a park that the city owns, we are inviting you generally to come there, right? It's an open park, and that's what makes that a little different. And second, look, I am happy to, if there's a nonprofit organization that wants to indemnify the city and keep this thing open and say, hey, at your own risk, we will take the risk. We've got some track record of some kind of operation. They want to temporarily do this while we go find funding. Just to show you, I'm more than open to trying to find an amicable solution. I'm happy to do that. I have a feeling we're not going to get a lot of takers that want to take on the risk of that. If there was some viable solution of which to keep it open that doesn't expose the taxpayer to significant liability, it's now pretty well documented that it's not safe to open, then I would entertain any option in that front. But there's just not an option for us at the city to continue to say, welcome to our park in any way. I mean, at your own risk. I mean, there's a sign for that at every park right now that's
right.
Open and functioning. So, if it was just that easy and someone fell through something that we knew was broken, You know, that's not how the league system's going to work, in our opinion. So it's just what we had to sign. So that's where we're at with it.
And also, the parking lot is closed. The parking lot is closed too, right? The parking lot is closed off to deter people from parking in a place where they're not supposed to be.
Well, it's a double-edged sword there. I heard you say that earlier, and that is accurate. It's so people don't park there. But it's also, secondarily, the weird location of that when they built that side that parking lot was that you could skip the light at Summit. So we're seeing that a lot.
Where
people are coming up northbound. And then
they're driving around the light through the parking lot? I guess that's true. So, I guess you could, yeah.
So it's really a double-edged, really a twofold reason, I guess.
Okay. All right. We're talking to, I'd never thought of that because there's always cars in there and it seems like that would, but I can see if it stopped, that's like cutting through the gas station and get around the red light. I can see why people would do that against the law. All right. We're talking to Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mayor, hang on for just a second. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
And I'm not showing any of these slowdowns. Taking a look over near Bay Bluffs Park and Chimney Park and those places. It looks like Scenic doing just fine. Not showing any problems on Summit either. If you see an accident or a slowdown, text in your traffic tips 437-1620. This brought to you by Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival. Make your plans now for the annual Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival from October 4th through the 8th with over 100 artists and 19 venues. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. Back to Mayor D.C. Reeves. Just a quick note. I had meant to ask you this before and I forgot. The Shot Spotter that the Escambia County Sheriff's Office is putting in, they've announced their zone for doing it. Have you guys figured out a place you're doing it? I assume you have.
Yeah, we have a more contiguous. I know they have a couple different sections they were looking at. Ours is ultimately going to run on the east side from kind of the Tarragona, maybe even a little further east, all the way basically through Pace Boulevard. And think about the north side of Cervantes, kind of that rectangle there.
Okay.
Pace to the west, Tarragona to the east, Cervantes to the north will be our 3 square miles there. And we continue, the update is we continue to work on where we're going to put those sensors. Some are going to be on our utilities. I actually just had a phone call with FPL this week to talk through some places we want to attempt to put them there. There's some complication to that, but they're working with us to find the best options that they may have or their partners may have in and around there. So working on that installation, our hope is sometime in late fall, November, December area, which is what we hope to have it online by.
Very good. And last thing, and I know we just don't have enough time to really get into this, but I spent quite a bit of time in the first part of this hour sharing the perspective from your arborist, who I thought was very great about the challenge of the tree need in poor neighborhoods versus the tree need in nicer neighborhoods. And what you have is volunteers and neighborhood associations who are willing to do the work and put in the trees and defray the cost. And so they basically get about a 10-to-1 multiplier for the number of trees in the ground taken care of over time in nicer parts of town versus in, you know, poorer parts because of the whatever reasons there are a bunch of them. And so for the short, more bang for the buck, funding the neighborhood associations to do a lot of this work instead of the city putting their own money in. I thought this was a fascinating and very transparent conversation about just making there be more trees. Am I understanding it properly? And is this kind of how the at least next level of funding is going to go, probably more to the neighborhood associations, to those rather than to the tree deserty kind of areas?
The brunt of our dollars, and we're excited about that $1 million grant we got for the urban forestry grant, which ultimately is $700,000 is going to be for tree planting in underserved parts of our community. And if you expect our entire tree planting trust fund is somewhere in the $250,000 range.
Right.
So that's what the city has to plant trees. We just added another $700,000. So that's going to be an awesome injection into that. Now, the one delineation I'd make that we discussed was that was one $5,500 proposal that came through the Neighborhoods Association. And the reason that the dollars are more efficient is that we aren't going to be required, we, the city, are not going to be required to water them. And one of the things I did when we came in is we actually identified what it cost to plant a tree. We just kind of used to have kind of a throw-up number there. We just put it on the board and said $500. No, we wanted to add labor and time. What does it actually
cost
for the city to plant a tree? So, and it's about $1,600, it turns out. So you heard our arborist, Chris, talk about that, is to say, hey, when we're responsible for it, it's going to be about $1,600. But if a neighborhood is going to buy a tree for $100 and they're going to put it in their own yard, and we just hope that it's self-policing and the fact that they want the tree in their front yard to not die, then they're going to water it and they're going to take care of it. Well, then that's a much more efficient way to handle those dollars. So I think really in the end, what we talked about there is, hey, for $5,500 for us to get hundreds of trees out of that, and even if the efficiency is 70-75%, that's still going to be a great net positive to our tree canopy as a city. But we've got to be more meticulous and more frankly, significantly more funding to solve the greater issue that our country sees, which is when you live in a poorer part of a city anywhere in the United States, the sidewalks 10 to 15 degrees warmer. And right. These are people that also don't have access to a vehicle and are walking and are biking to work. And really, probably, frankly, need it less aesthetically and more for human quality of life.
Right, right.
And so that's what we're really excited about.
Very good. We always like to end with, and that makes sense for help me understand that. We always like to end with the lightning round. So these are the easier questions to some people's mind. First question: string cheese. Do you pull the strings and eat them that way, or do you get a hot dog?
I mean, you have to do the first thing, right? Is it legal to?
Well, candy's a lawbreaker, and let us throw alone on that. Good for you. I'm glad you're a civilized human. Name, if you can, candy's calling me a jerk. A creepy movie scene that really messed with your head, maybe for a time. Maybe you saw it as a kid, but what was that scene in a movie where, like, it was too real for you?
Ooh, you know what? I have too much time in my life to watch scary movies, you know, as it is. I don't need any more when I'm sitting on my couch. But I don't know. You know, the Blair Witch Project affected me.
Oh, a little bit. Interesting.
It's not so much a scene. I mean, it was just so real at the time.
Yeah, I can see that.
That dates me. But, yeah, it's not so much that one. Maybe the scene at the end.
And now every time they shake a camera, you get triggered by that. I can see how that
exactly.
would work.
Exactly.
And last thing is, on your bed, in your home, do you have one single large duvet, comfort, or whatever you want to call it, or do you guys have, like, the split? Each of you have your own one so that you can scrunch and move and wiggle without having to affect the other person?
Just the one. Okay. But we also have a 60-pound dog, so there's no wiggling, there's no,
that's the comforter weight, like a paperweight.
Whatever claim you stake when you go to bed is the territory you get. Wake up in the morning.
Hey, follow-up question. What kind of dog is it, and what's its name?
Bernadoodle, and his name's Leonard. So he's about to be two in November. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
He's the smartest dog, or the dumbest smart dog.
Either way, I think we all can relate. That's perfect.
Leonard Reeves.
There you go. DC, thank you so much for the time, Mayor of City of Pensacola, DC Reeves. Always good to talk to you. We look forward to the City Council meeting tomorrow night, and then our conversation next week, sir. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
7:54 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM Radio stays in your car. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknight 7 to 10 before WEAR-TV News on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Suckers walk, money talks, but it can't touch my three lock box.
We'll be right back.
get it, Sammy. 756 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Candy's got our traffic on the fives.
And not showing any of these slowdowns or delays. Not right now. It looks like everything is running smoothly, even the front gate of Pensacola NAS. Not showing any problems on the 3 Mile Bridge. Your usual areas of congestion at lights and schools and stuff, but it looks like everything is running smoothly. A little slow, it looks like, westbound on Highway 90 coming over Escambia Bay as you're making your way onto 9 Mile. If you say an accident or have a traffic tip, text it in, 437-1620. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, yeah. Candy. Oh, we have now the Battle of Pensacola team rosters are out. That's the kickball tournament. The Escambia County Sheriff's Foundation, right? And
yeah.
The ECFR and all kinds of other folks. And last year it was media versus politicians. Mm-hmm. And we had the military was hosting us kind of, and the sheriff's agency was hosting them. So they've sort of kept some of that together. I'm just looking over the list here, and, you know, Mel from Cat Country is on my team. Michelle Salzman is on our team. Mike Kohler, County Commissioner, and Robert Bender is on my team. Weird. Lumen May and Jeff Bergosh are on the other team. It's probably strategic.
You guys could have cemented your friendship, though.
That's funny. I was just looking over the names, like, oh, what's going on here? So this is good.
Well, no, my money's on Bergosh's team.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, Jared Moore's on that team,
yeah.
And Andrew Hobbs and Casey Jones and
Andrew Hobbs.
I'm watching you, Jared. I'm watching you. And Alex Andrade's on Team B as well. 7:58 on News Radio.
Fun. And that's October 21st.
That's
is
right.
At
October
Wahoo
21st
Stadium?
At Wahoo Stadium.
Nice.
Uh-huh. We got Tommy Leiter
does
on our side.
Does it cost anything to pay
oh, no,
to
I
watch?
There's, or? No, there's no money, but on your deathbed, you'll get total consciousness. David
well,
Wayne
nice
is in
to have
the
that
newsroom.
Going for you.
So I got that going for me. David, what's going on in the newsroom, sir?
The Senate's approved a spending bill aimed at keeping the federal government from shutting down this weekend. The bill the Senate released Tuesday would set up a showdown with the House, where Republicans who control it are deeply divided. Target says it's closing 9 stores in major cities, Andrew, like New York City and San Francisco. All of this because of theft and violence. 1 store in Harlem, 3 in San Francisco, 3 in Portland. Target saying that organized retail crime is threatening the safety of their employees and their customers in those locations.
Yeah, no, it's weird, too. And you also have this phenomenon of not just stores, but like grocery stores. I know the mayor of Chicago is kind of having this conversation of, you know, well, we've got these food deserts, right, where there's nobody's, or they're leaving even now because of the crime issues. And they're talking about establishing like a municipal grocery store, like a city-funded grocery store to deliver, you know, to sell groceries to people. As a kind of, how do you solve this problem when people are poor, don't have transportation, and don't have
Listen
groceries?
Listen on air at 92.